This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Rob LaRue, president of the National Farmers Union. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with NFU's Rob LaRue next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's Crop Insurance Industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 490 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Over 300 farmers and ranchers were in Washington last week as a part of the National Farmers Union annual fly-in. NFU President Rob LaRue says producer attitudes on the industry are mixed, as certainly weather conditions and economics have varied again this year by region. LaRue says there is a common concern among NFU membership.
So I think folks more than anything want to make sure that we get this farm bill done right, because we know that nobody expected all the disruption and changes that we saw over these past 5 years, and we want to make sure we're as well prepared as possible.
So in a perfect world, there would be a budget deal already through both sides of Congress, and it would be ready to go in place. In a perfect world, the farm bill would already be done, the I's dotted and T's crossed, and we'd be ready to go at the beginning of the fiscal year. Instead, gridlock. How does gridlock affect the policymakers that are trying to write, hopefully, a 23 farm bill?
Well, it doesn't help, that's for sure. You know, I think that it raises all kinds of questions. I mean, in some ways, as farm bills get put together, there can be a pathway through, but you have to have a political kind of pathway to even be able to move that forward. And right now, that level of uncertainty is super high, which keeps negotiations slowed. They certainly are still talking, but I tell you, the level of uncertainty is huge out there. One thing, though, that we're certainly trying to caution lawmakers is we don't want just a kind of a rubber stamp of what we did last go around. We need to make sure that we take the time to look at existing farm policy, what changes really need to be made. We know that there are going to be tough budgetary questions involved in the farm bill, but we need to make sure that we do everything possible to get the best possible farm bill and not just kind of kicking the can down the road if we can avoid it.
If the budget deal is to come together with some sort of a continuing resolution, it will be a resolution of different mindsets with regard to fiscal policy. And the Freedom Caucus appears to be hell-bent about making significant cuts. If that happens for the budget, what does that spell for Farm Bill at a time when many farm groups have said it's really time to spend more on farm programs, not less?
Well, absolutely. And we know that traditionally and at its heart, based upon members in many parts across the country, farm bills can be and should be very bipartisan pieces of legislation. And so when you have just a few members of one house with an agenda for major disruption here, it raises huge questions for actually getting something down. I think that, you know, beyond the potential delays in getting a farm bill done, we know that depending on how the budget situation comes out, that existing support for farmers, for those consumers in need, could also take a huge hit. And we're just not in the time where we can afford this kind of disruption from our leaders. And that was part of the message that our members certainly were raising up on Capitol Hill.
So when you come to a fly-in, you get the opportunity to share the things that are important to you, but you also hear information. And I know that you had Agriculture Committee leadership that appeared before your group and offered comments. So what did you hear from House Ag Chair Thompson and from Senate Ag Chairwoman Stabenow?
Well, I you might imagine that I don't think anybody revealed too much, as they are in a really delicate kind of period of negotiations right now. And I take that really as a positive sign. Obviously, all four corners of the House and Senate Ag Committees relayed the hard work that they're under, you know, echoed a lot of the same, actually, priorities that our members want to see: a stronger safety net, for example, a strong crop insurance program, make sure that we keep that balance really across the farm bill in place. That's also encouraging, but nowhere, quite frankly, was the crystal ball kind of so clear as to determine what this path forward politically is going to be.
There was earlier talk of, well, maybe by the end of the year, but 2024 is a number divisible by four and an election year. What kind of pressure does agriculture feel to see this thing across the finish line?
Pressure is pretty immense here. So I think it's all but certain, right, that we won't be seeing it by the end of the month. But, you know, I don't think we can take the pressure off or eye off trying to get this accomplished by the end of the year, for the very reason that you said, getting into the next year and some of the politics make that all the more unlikely. That said, I'll just argue that, you know, current efforts up on the Hill to distract further with talk of impeachment proceedings and so forth just create an environment that's going to make it really difficult to get any kind of legislation through. And, you know, with the Farm Bill kind of lined up here, politically right now, it remains a huge lift.
So with regard to the Farm Bill and crops, ARC and PLC are the two acronyms, and both of those have issues with regard to different groups that are saying base acres need to be updated, or they don't need to be updated, or there needs to be a voluntary update. And most would suggest that the reference price that is posted now for commodities, at least up until now, has been well below the cost of production. So these are areas that cost money. Where do these particular programs stand in the eyes of NFU, and what's your request from the Hill?
Oh, we're asking for the moon and stars, and I say that, you know, half in jest. What I really mean is what we're asking for is much in line with farmers and ranchers anywhere, and that is we do need to update and strengthen Title I programs. We certainly support adjustments in the reference prices. We support a voluntary base acre update. And, you know, we also, quite frankly, would love to see an option at a reduced coverage, but an option potentially out there for a dual enrollment with ARC and PLC. None of that's going to be cheap. We understand that. But I don't think it's our members' jobs to communicate to the Hill, you know, what some sort of glossed over version of what we need in the way of a safety net. I think our obligation is to be really clear about what the needs are and to work really hard, not just with the ag committees, but with leadership to continue to get creative. This Farm Bill is no different than many others in the past that have had huge budget challenges and so forth. You know, when the pressure gets high, folks can get creative here. We don't yet know what that looks like, but we also know that one thing that is kind of sacred in a Farm Bill, and we certainly support, is not robbing one title to pay for another.
So I had a conversation with a young farmer. He's fourth generation in his operation, but he's trying to come in and assume majority stake and adding acres. And he suggested that for himself, the number of acres that he had brought in, he's looking at 70% that is not covered by a base. So while other farmers, maybe more seasoned and older, have a risk management tool, he doesn't. So with a view of transitioning this industry and protecting this industry, is this base issue one that appears to be an option or something that's critically important as we start a new five-year plan?
That's actually a really great question there, and one that needs to be, you know, pretty closely examined, because you know, you highlight this one particular issue with base and folks trying to kind of increase their operation. And we have many other challenges for that next generation trying to come in, whether they are multi-generation or whether they are trying to get into the business. We know that all of those challenges are huge, and I don't think we often over many years talk about the need to do more to help that next generation. We haven't done nearly enough. And when you look out in the countryside at some of the land prices right now, about the limitations, if you will, on farm loans, and in spite of some of the targeted support for beginning and new farmers, I think we are really not doing this next generation enough service yet to make sure that we can get them farming, keep them farming, and have the safety net included to make them as potentially successful going forward.
You alluded to this at the beginning of our conversation. I'll come back to it. Can agriculture afford to see Congress just rubber stamp the 18 and move it down the line? Or are there some heavy lifting positions that we can't kick the can anymore without implications?
There's a couple questions there. First of all, if we're talking about an extension to either get us past, first, we have to get this farm bill done this year if we can at all. But it's got to be the right farm bill. And so if we have to talk about an extension of the existing law to get us past presidential election, if you will, then I think that's something that we can probably chat about. Hopefully we don't have to get to that point, but I think the idea of simply kind of rubber stamping, as you called it, and pushing it forward for the next 5 years, I think is at best a missed opportunity, and at worst, you know, a huge disservice to the farmers and ranchers out there. We know as we look through all of the kind of changes that we saw over the last 5 years that we weren't as prepared as we should have been in a farm bill. Some of that couldn't have been predicted, but we know that whether it's climate-related or other market-driven disruptions out there, what can we be doing to build in more resilience, if you will, to the farm bill to make sure that we can be as prepared as possible for whatever may be coming at us in the next 5 years.
As I read through your talking points during the fly-in, an idea of excluding marginal land to see some benefits from crop insurance. Can you expand on that?
So really this is intended to, it's not a CRP, but it's really trying to kind of lower your risk with crop insurance, allowing folks the option of taking some marginal land, land that we know maybe given conditions in a given year that things are not going to be all that great, so take that land out, get a benefit on your crop insurance. It's another way to kind of build in, I think, some greater assistance here. This is certainly a concept that we're working with a few House and Senate offices up there. We think that at the very least, this idea of giving farmers a year-to-year option to pull some land out to capture some benefit there makes sense for the land. It could make sense for the producer and their particular operation at the time, and we think, you know, has a potential market benefit as well.
Shifting to dairy for a moment, there are two lanes moving in parallel. You have the federal milk marketing order hearings that are going on, and you also have the farm bill. These are two pivotal issues that can have major implications for dairy producers across the country. What are your thoughts on either?
Well, I mean, from Farmers Union's point of view, I think on both of those tracks, we're actually missing some of the big picture here. That is that with the just enormous consolidation that's happening right now, and in California with milk prices, you know, we're seeing a lot of our members out there, in spite of their size and access to market and so forth, really struggling to cover their costs. And so the fact of the matter is that whether they're in Wisconsin, California, other places, the rapid just consolidation in dairy right now is something that I don't think any of, whether it's the farm bill conversation or the milk marketing order changes that are being considered, we have to make sure that farmers out there are able to cover their costs as best possible, get a fair price to keep them on the land. The conversation right now is missing that, I'm afraid. And so if we aren't careful, we will continue to see, you know, 100,000 Cal Plus dairies out there, and I don't think that's good for the country. It's certainly not good for communities, and we certainly know it's not good for our dairy farmer members right now.
Let's look at livestock and stay with beef for just a moment. You are seeing lower inventory numbers now from the country because of weather challenges and economic challenges. The Farmers Union certainly has been a group outspoken about a need for change in cattle price discovery. Can that be accomplished in a farm bill, or how can you achieve objectives that you feel are going to be better for the outlook for beef producers?
Well, in spite of the fact that right now, you know, you talked about the inventory and so forth, and we're seeing the prices kind of reflect that, our members want to make sure that the two agriculture committees don't take their eye off the kind of larger challenges within the beef industry and continue to push for cattle price discovery act to be included in the farm bill. I think that there are a number of things, including changes to the Packers and Stockyards Act, that past farm bills have certainly included. We support, at the very least, when you see us moving backwards, like the House Appropriations Bill, which tried to block USDA's efforts to strengthen the Packers and Stockyards Act. We're going to fight that with everything we have. And in the context of a farm bill, we don't want anyone trying to push us backwards. We certainly hope to make progress on the beef market going forward.
Is a challenge to the flow of economics of scale in mandating a certain amount of livestock to be sold at auction, is that the answer for producers?
Well, I think what we need to make sure is that we don't have a system in place which is limiting transparency in the market. The reason why we believe that a cash market is critically important is because when that is so consolidated and in the hands of so few buyers, you don't have a truly functioning marketplace. And so let's make sure that we're keeping the basic tenets of a good market out there. And so keeping that cash price discovery is one way to do that. You know, I often hear the expression, whether we're talking about cattle markets or anything else kind of in a really consolidated, you know, ag space, that, you know, this is just the market doing its thing. And I think that we need to rethink that. That's not true. Actually, we have to make sure that policies, lack of antitrust enforcement, that those mechanisms are not driving this consolidation and limiting individual producers out there and putting ranchers at a huge disadvantage. So let's truly make sure we have an open, well-functioning marketplace, and that's what we're fighting for.
Rob, with regard to the USMCA, we have a conflict with Mexico over genetically enhanced crops, especially corn. We have a conflict with Canada over dairy. And yet the Farmers Union is talking about country of origin labeling and a label that has been shot down before in the North American Trade Agreement. How is this proposal that you're suggesting different than before, and what do U.S. producers lose, in your opinion, if you don't get this policy?
Well, if we don't get this policy, I'll start there. If we don't get this policy, it's not just that producers lose the opportunity to gain, a market situation where they can truly sell their product as a product of the USA. Consumers, though, are the largest loser, if you will, because right now they are, it's kind of shrouded. Folks have a lack of understanding. There's a lack of transparency on where product is actually coming for, on the beef side in particular. And so as we look at solutions to restore country of origin labeling or, you know, something similar, I think that we're not talking about revisiting the WTO decision. We're not talking about taking Canada and Mexico to task on this. We believe firmly, as we talk to trade lawyers and so forth, that there is an opportunity here, and we certainly have supporters in the Senate and the House to make progress in this way and to restore labeling for consumers that ultimately benefits producers out there. I think that this is an opportunity. We're going to continue to work with our Senate supporters on this, and I don't think this is a question about going back to an earlier version. We believe that USTR has lots of mechanisms to put this in place with USDA in ways that are truly trade compliant here, but still brings that transparency.
Rob, with the in the arena of renewable fuels, you have industry apparently that is anxious to see next-gen biofuels, sustainable aviation fuel. But then you have an EPA whose volume announcements for renewables was barely at the level of production. You have a question now before decision makers of what model that you use in determining fuels and whether it's going to qualify for tax credits from the Inflation Reduction Act. Where do the farmers union stand on renewable fuels and opportunities there for farmers?
We need to make it all possible, and that's on all fronts. And so we certainly are working really hard to make sure that that we have a full kind of list of feedstocks that can be part of that solution, making sure that the models that are in place make that possible. We continue to strongly believe that whether we're talking about canola, whether we're talking about soybeans or corn and ethanol, you know, all of these have huge opportunities in the renewable fuels space, you know, going forward. And then as we look at, you know, with a lot of opportunity and excitement for the potential for sustainable aviation fuel, we want to make sure that the right incentives are put in place and that we aren't doing any kind of unfortunate kind of barriers to the marketplace. But as you talked about, you know, we would prefer a little better kind of market signals here, but we're continuing to fight to make sure that that future looks as bright as possible for our growers.
Where does the Next Generation Biofuels Act stand in priorities for your members?
It's huge. We're a huge supporter for it. You know, as I was traveling around the Midwest a few weeks ago and so forth, I was able to have a lot of conversations. I think folks are very excited about the possibility. There, it's certainly the right signal, the right time, we're hopeful.
Well, Rob LaRue, you certainly are coming off a very busy week, not only of working in Washington, but traveling on behalf of your members. And we thank you for taking time to visit with us on this edition of Open Mic. Rob, you've been here before. It is Open Mic, and you know today, NFU gets the last word.
Appreciate it. I tell you, we love what we do as farmers out there, and Farmers Union in particular. We are always going to speak up for family farmers and ranchers wherever they are. We're going to keep up the fight.
Our thanks to Rob LaRue, president of the National Farmers Union, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Daly.